everybody.
Good morning. Third week in a row.
That's right.
Well, who are you?
Who am I? I am Sadie K. Frazier of the Daily Escape Podcast.
I am Stephen St. Clair of the Crafted Quilt Podcast.
And we are actually doing our Sunday episode of Have Coffee, We'll Travel.
That's right. So this morning, we made a little something for breakfast. And
there's no other words to say, but oh my gird.
We found it on an older episode of Rachel Ray. What was the?
Justin Sutherland, I think, was his name.
So it was an older episode, but he was making, I believe he's up in Minnesota, but his biscuits and gravy recipe that he uses has roots based out of the South. So let me tell you about this recipe, can I, Sadie?
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It needs to be shared. We share our hearts and our inspiration and our traumas and all that stuff, but come on. We got to share biscuits and gravy recipe, too, because that's who we are.
And I have always been, like, everybody's got their one clutch thing. Like, if you could take everything away from me, just don't take that. Well, mine has always been one thing. I've always made biscuits. And the recipe I've always used is from my mom's side of the family, and it
was it your great grandma's recipe, or did it go further
back? It was my great grandma's aunt.
Okay.
So this lady, and I don't remember her name, I have to ask my mom, was probably born in the late 1800s, if I had to venture a guess. And so, a little backstory, my grandma every Sunday would get up and make my great grandpa biscuits for breakfast before they went to church. And
ding, ding, ding. Love language plug.
Yes, please. this was the original hashtag foodie before mm-hmm. foodie was foodie.
Before grandma and grandpa. And
now, I've always made... Now, I'm 40 plus years old. 47. And I have always made some variation of this recipe. But there is something to be said about sticking to the recipe, sort of. So when we made this, we ran across that episode and we watched it. I'll explain the biscuit part, Sadie, you can do the gravy part.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I've always loved biscuits. There's nothing better. Like, and I even like the dough. And that's the thing. If you see me making biscuits, you're gonna see me stick my finger in it.
Snacking on the dough.
And it's a good way to test the dough. You gotta proof it.
We've pretty much perfected biscuits and gravy over the years. You've perfected the biscuits. I've perfected the gravy. You even perfected the gravy after a while, too.
I learned from you. So
that's kind of our thing, is biscuits and gravy. So.
And now the original recipe, just real quick, I won't tell you all the ins and outs. It's not a secret, but it's 100 plus years old. So it has the basic dry ingredients, flour, salt, baking powder. Those are the three main dries. Now, the original, I believe, called for Crisco, and depending on how old you are, lard or oleo, but it was always Crisco growing up. And the higher the milk fat, like, honestly, if you're going to make it the right way, you would use probably whole milk or buttermilk. So there's like a whole hierarchy of liquids you would add. Start with buttermilk or whole milk.
And we've made
2%, 1%.
A lot with regular milk, but it's not the same without the buttermilk.
I won't do skim milk for cooking. No. It's not worth it. It's water with white in it.
I mean, skim milk is not made for fatties. Let's get real.
No. So, bare minimum, don't go below 1% because you're losing that dairy fat in it. And now I'm very much a flavor-oriented person. You can, if you don't have the other ingredients, it's okay. Like, I'll use, like, stick butter. I'll use, like, Imperial butter. That's my favorite margarine to use, but regular milk is okay. Just don't go below 1%. However, if you want to knock your taste buds or your partner's or your guest's taste buds out of their mouth, buttermilk, real salted butter, all the right ingredients, because each aspect of what you're putting into that mixing bowl needs to stand up on its own, which is why you want to use buttermilk, real butter. But in this recipe's case that we made this morning, Justin's, One thing that I had never seen before is he froze his salted butter, froze his Crisco. Now, when I use the Crisco, I think you probably, if you want it true frozen, I don't know that you're actually going to get it unless you have a deep freeze. So when I pulled out the Crisco, it was hard on the outside, like a little frozen, but it was still soft. And then what you do is you grate in the butter and the Crisco, and it helps with the flakiness and the overall, as it slowly cooks into the dough. Instead of having already room temp butter or Crisco, it's going to melt faster. So if you use frozen or near frozen butter and Crisco, it's going to take a little bit longer to incorporate into the internal parts of the biscuit dough. So in Justin's biscuit dough, so there's regular biscuit dough, there's chives, bacon,
cheese,
a cup of
sharp cheddar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I didn't follow the mixing directions, and I don't know if it was good or bad or indifferent, but I put all the dry ingredients in first, blended those up, because you don't want clumps of salt or powder. It's better to evenly distribute by mixing the dry together. Then I added all the liquid, and then I used my mixer, mixed it just enough to get it all good and thoroughly mixed. Then I added the cheese and the bacon and the chives and hand mixed it in.
And 3/4 of the rest of that package of bacon went into the gravy. So you can imagine how
one cup of bacon in the dough.
Savory this was.
Dumped it out on a pan. Now my problem, a lot of doughs tell you to handle just a little bit. But because of the amount of ingredients, you almost have to over handle just a little bit. Because I tend to layer, I flatten out my dough. And then I fold it in. I pretend like I'm folding the blanket. I layer it. I flip it over, roll it back out, layer it. Because by the time you're done, you got to pick a biscuit up. Excuse me, I misspoke. You literally will just pull the top off because it's in such a neat little layer.
I think that helps make the layers in there too, the flakiness of it when you fold it like that.
And then, as I say, the Crisco is what helps in that too. So you can't just have a good bacon, cheddar-y chive biscuit. What goes good with that, Sadie?
You have to have gravy on top of it. Gravy. And he actually, Justin Sutherland, actually included his gravy recipe too. So I made it. I make it a little bit different usually. I've made it with ground beef. We've always had hamburger gravy growing up. Boring, plain, still good, but
it's okay in a pinch. Plain.
But because my parents never really were big Italian sausage fans. So you are a huge Italian sausage fan. So most times now. And actually, it's a friend of his from work, Terrence. We always buy a half a freezer worth of Italian sausage that's fresh right from the animal. So we're out of it, unfortunately.
That would have been good this morning, I think.
It would have been good. But so this recipe called for ground pork, but it has a little bit of thyme and rosemary in it also. I didn't put much of that in because I didn't want to overwhelm it, but it gave it just enough to make it taste Italian sausage-y.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's got this time. So when I make my gravy, I usually brown up the ground beef and the onions or the sausage and the onions, however you make yours. And then I add a stick of butter and I melt that in to the meat. Once that's melted, I would add my flour and my milk. And my recipe calls for 8 tablespoons of flour and 4 cups of milk. So this one, you don't put any butter in it. I did add a tiny bit to the bottom just to make sure that the pork didn't stick, but I browned up the pork, some garlic, some onion, and you add the flour and you let it cook without any butter in it, which I've never done before.
It's kind of opposite.
It's very opposite. There was no butter until the very end. So you add the flour, you let it cook for like 2 minutes until it gets nice and bubbly and hot. Then you add 6.5 cups of milk, and I actually doubled the milk because we ended up making double the gravy. But anyway, you let that cook until it's almost thickened, and then you add a stick of butter, and you stir that in, and then it's ready to go. And it was probably one of the best gravies and biscuit combination that we've ever had.
Now, would you say, excuse me, the same holds true for gravy in terms of butter versus margarine, 1% milk versus whole milk.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be thicker. It's going to be, I think the whole milk makes it a little bit richer. But yeah. we don't usually buy whole milk anymore. You and I drink 1% milk. So 99% of the time when we make gravy, that's what we use. But actually, Hy-Vee screwed up our groceries this week and gave us a whole container of whole milk, lactose-free.
Might be chugging on that.
So I used about 4 cups of 1%, like we normally would, and then the other couple cups I put in of that whole milk. So
it was good. And the key thing that we're trying to drive home is your tongue is covered, well, your mouth really, but mainly your tongue is covered with millions of taste buds. Each part of your tongue is going to pick up on salty, sweet, savory, spicy, what have you. So the more flavor profile you have on your food that you're making, i.e. whole milk versus 1% milk, you know, the anything animal related is going to have, there's a certain amount of fat that you want to go after. Like if I cook out with ribeye, I don't want a heavy fat-laden piece of meat. Mm-hmm. Ribeye has, you want to look at the marbling, and it's, you know, that's why it's my favorite steak, because, I mean, yeah, you can always cut off the excess fat, but sometimes it's also okay to leave it a little bit. So when Sadie was making the gravy, you use the wholest part of the ingredient possible, the real butters. Did you end up adding a little buttermilk to it?
Yeah, you had about a tablespoon left of yours that you'd added to your biscuit, so I just dumped it in also. Not enough to probably
not necessary, notice, but it just adds flavor. There's a point when you're just like literally like, okay, how much flavor can we pack into this?
Well, apparently a little bit more than that, because his recipe also topped it with a fried egg, so we decided to try that too, and that was awesome on top of it. Let that runny, gooey, sunny side up egg just run all over those biscuits. It was so good.
And I told Sadie afterwards, I said, well, Guy Fieri would have stopped at the egg.
Yep.
Like, I'll eat the biscuits and gravy, but leave off the egg.
Yep.
So you're asking me, why are we talking so much about food? So, sorry, I actually had a bite in my mouth. I mean, we're talking about biscuits and gravy. We might as well podcast with it. I mentioned earlier the biscuit recipe that I have used my entire life, and I'm plus 40 years old. The good part about a good recipe, especially one that's been in the family for so long, it comes with memories. And within those memories comes, hopefully, love. I can remember my best memory, tied to biscuits, but tied to family. I grew up in Denver the first part of my life, the first 10 years. And I believe my grandpa had already passed. But my mom's mom and dad came over. And we went driving in the mountains. I think we drove clear down to the United States Air Force Base in Colorado Springs. So that was an all-day adventure. And then at some point, the adults in the car decided, hey, we're going to make a platter of scrambled eggs and biscuits. And so when I'm making my, if I stick to the recipe, that memory of 7-year-old, 8-year-old me sitting at the table with an enormous platter of eggs and biscuits being placed in front of me, I can still taste the biscuits and the memory just comes back. So, it's very important for families, even if you don't really like to cook, but you have kids, establish some sort of
tradition
or a recipe book that is turned more into a family album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sadie has in the works right now, hint, hint, a cookbook of just her family's recipes, my family recipes. Recipes probably found all over the web, but are family-based. Because I would almost guarantee you every one of those recipes has a family memory tied to it.
Exactly. And if you have kids and you're thinking, there comes a certain point, like when your kids are too little and you're making all these things and you're doing all these traditions and they don't even seem to notice. They don't really seem to pay attention to what you're doing. They're just eating food because it tastes good and they're not really associating that with that being nostalgic for you either. And then maybe your kids are teenagers after that and they definitely don't want to sit down with you anymore and eat those same meals. Or they ask for them once in a while on special occasions, but they could care less what the history is behind that stuff. Yeah. We're finding now our adult children are reminiscing and wanting to recreate some of these recipes, and their memories are now flooding back, which I think is cool. And
two out of our five kids have kids.
Yep.
And our oldest daughter has a daughter and soon to have another daughter that their first daughter eats everything under the sun. And it's like you are inadvertently creating memories with that child. Mm-hmm. So when our grandchild is an adult, they'll say, "Hey, Mom, what was that thing you used to make for me when I was little?" Or, you know, "Hey, Mamma, Papa, can you make your biscuits and gravy?" They may not realize why they like it until they realize at some point, oh, there's a memory with that. Because all my grandparents are dead. So when I make that biscuit recipe, I also do it to honor them. And I'm going to cry. So it's,
I think we've both been, that's probably why we're bringing this up now too. We've both been feeling very nostalgic lately, very life is too short. Where did the time go with our grandparents, with our parents? It's just, we are the older generation now and we've got aging parents and even our kids are having medical issues that you wouldn't think at 20 and 30 years old too. So
when we were standing in the kitchen, I suggested to Sadie, of course, it's always like, oh, like not just a light bulb, but like a strobe light goes up. And we should do a podcast on blah, blah, blah. And then as I mentioned,
I had my knife in my hand cutting up the bacon at the time.
Have an old knife. It's not sharp. It's just, and that's the significance of that knife is not the fact that it's this, but it's because it's your grandma's knife.
Yeah, and it's not even my mom's, it's my grandma's. And my grandma was born in 1906, if that tells you anything. And she's probably had it since she was first married. I don't know. But I will not get rid of that knife, and I use it for almost everything
I cut. You won't even let me sharpen it.
It's dull as crap. I'm afraid it's going to break.
So what are, my mom used to use for cutting biscuit dough, a tomato paste can. I remember that. I never understood why that. So I don't have an official biscuit cutter. I wish I did, but
I mean, I can give you a tomato paste can anytime you want, honey.
See, and I like when I make biscuits, they're probably palm of your hand size. Yeah. Probably a little bigger than they should be, but you know, your doctor won't thank me at all for that.
True.
But when you don't want a little biscuit for biscuits and gravy. You want to cut them in half or crumble them, but you want to open them up so that you have a surface area required to hold the amount of gravy that you want. And if you're using like a small biscuit, it's just there's nothing there.
Yeah.
However, the biscuit is going to be good.
That's true.
No matter what size. So what's another object from your childhood that is a family?
Just as far as like things to cook out of, like the Revereware pans that used to have the copper bottoms on them. For a while growing up, I've since changed that, and I don't even know when that happened. I guess over quarantine, I finally got myself some new pans, but I would literally go to Goodwill and buy someone else's pans because I had to have those pans from my childhood. I remember my grandma standing over that same skillet with the two black handles and the copper bottom on it.
Certain, there's something to be said about things that stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom would use Corningware, casserole dishes.
Yeah, we always had Corningware.
And then she had, and this is going to be kind of a sad part, not really, but so when I was probably late 80s, my mom had used a brown glass mixing bowl, and I don't remember who made it, But I had a spoon and I tossed in the sink without even looking, and it hit my mom's brown bowl that was probably predates the 70s, 60s, and I broke it. And my mom heard it, and she turned around. She was in the dining room. Turned around, and I'm like, I panicked. I looked at the bowl. I looked at my mom, and end of story. I had broken a family heirloom. Now, in the grand scheme of things, was it really a true family heirloom? Not really, but it was something.
It was the memory.
Yeah. It was my mom.
She could go out and replace the bowl, but.
My mom, that was the bowl she made chocolate frosting in.
Yep.
So no more frosting for me.
You know, one of the things, grilled cheese, this is just a random thought off the top of my head, but I have a strong connection to grilled cheese sandwiches, and your mom has a lot to do with that, standing in her kitchen across the street from us in Independence when we both lived there. I don't even know if, it, I don't even think it was Velveeta at the time. I think it was like co-op cheese.
Yeah,
but she'd get out this big block of cheese, and it was the way she sliced it and showed. She made the best grilled cheese sandwiches, but I think it was more the conversations we had. She was like, yeah, my second mom growing up, and she would just talk to me, and like she was one of the first people that I felt like she actually was there to listen to me. But she would make grilled cheese sandwiches, and then my grandma Nita made grilled cheese sandwiches in her oven somehow, and it's the, I can still smell how the cheese melted. We call them fags. It's the extra pieces of the cheese that get crispy. All crunchy and crispy. But
yeah,
I can't to this day. I mean, it's so simple to make a grilled cheese sandwich in the oven or in a pan, and I still cannot make it like my grandma did. I don't even know what she did. It was probably just grandma's extra love and magic that she put into it. But my mom and my grandma both, or sorry, your mom and my grandma both, just that a memory is attached to those grilled cheese sandwiches. You
know, and that's a also another aspect of family recipes and cooking. That's an ancient thing also.
Mm-hmm.
The women of the village would cook, talking, sharing stories about everything. Men would be around the fire talking. And it was very role-oriented in the tribe or the clan or... So, as Sadie was saying, when she would cook with or just be near family relatives that were cooking, she would hear the stories or partake in the story making.
Mm-hmm.
And now as an adult, we have those stories from our past. We have stories of our present that are making stories for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And that, that was deep.
That was deep. I would encourage the younger generation, if anybody's listening, to pay attention. Pay attention to what your moms, your dads, your grandmas, your grandpas, even if you have great-grandparents still, pay attention to their stories and keep them close to your heart, because
absolutely,
you won't always have those.
Yeah. When our two girls, we have a mixed family. When our two girls were little and they started liking eggs, I would make fried eggs, but... I would break the egg and then take one of the half of the eggs and put it on top of the fried egg. And my youngest one was like, Dad, what are you doing? I'm putting the helmet on the egg. So there was another time when...
I didn't know you called it that either. Yeah, and I came home one day and she was trying to make them for him. And she's like, where's the helmet at? I'm like, what are you talking about? There's no helmets for eggs.
So and that stuck for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
And then another memory that I have when our oldest daughter was high school, a little bit older than that. She's early 20s, so she's not real far out of high school. She would stay up all night, but then had a tendency to stay on the phone with her now, but then boyfriend.
Fiance.
Yeah, now fiance. Back then it was a boyfriend. She would make cookies at night. And I would get so mad at her because she would just make the cookies and leave the mess. And I finally said, Megan, you can make cookies, but they have to be good. Otherwise, if they're not good and you suck at them, you have to clean your mess up. And that put a smile on her face, a very rare occurrence with her and I. She goes, okay, deal. I'll make cookies, and if they're good, I don't have to clean up the mess. But if they're sucky, then I have to clean up the mess. Well, let's be honest. She didn't clean up the mess no matter what.
But
and she made good cookies.
She perfected cookies from there on out, too. She perfected baking all the way around.
And there's a memory that pretty much her and I have. Now, whether or not she remembers that, but she will one day remember that. Like, my dad used to yell at me for making a mess when I would stay with my cookies. But then, you know, it's just... So I encourage anyone who's listening to... don't be so hard on your kids if they're trying to cook or make something. Obviously, teach them safety awareness, and but help them develop a good flavor profile. Help mm-hmm. them know their way around the kitchen. Teach them what tool goes best with doing that to this. You know, like we were talking about the biscuits this morning earlier from Justin. He cuts them into squares, and they're called cat's head biscuits. I don't do that. I have always, to me, biscuits are always round. I've had square biscuits, and that's okay. But there's no memories tied to square biscuits.
Mm-hmm.
As dumb as that sounds, my biscuits will always be round, and they will be giant. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And I always, here's another thing I always do, and Sadie laughs all the time, I always make a tester biscuit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit smaller, a little bit more off. It's not really cut. It's just a blob of dough at the end. And I have it kind of sitting there. It's like the unruly child that, you know, that didn't want to comb its hair. So when the biscuit's done, I've made biscuits for probably 40-plus years now. Always have a tester biscuit. And I always pull it out. It's the first thing I try. I try it with butter and then maybe a little honey and butter. And it's just a little thing I've done ever since I was a kid. Always have a tester biscuit. Or if you have something my mom used to tease about because she used to love chocolate, is that she would make cake or brownies, and then when she'd go to cover, she'd go, oh, I gotta straighten that edge up. That was her way of saying, I just want one last bite. So Chris and I do that, or Sadie and I do that, sorry. it was just a memory thing.
Speaking of cutting off the edge of brownies or cake or anything like that, we also used to mess with one of our kids who it drove her nuts. It had to be cut perfectly. Sandwiches had to be cut perfectly.
At an angle.
Yeah. Steven would just get her goat every single time and cut a piece right out of the center of the brownies. Just. And she'd come out in the kitchen. What kind of psychopath does this? Your parents who were paying you back for being a teenager.
So, yeah. And I would be across the house and I would hear her yell, who the ate the middle of the brownie? And, ha ha. That's for me, leaving me the mess you made last night. And honestly, let's be honest. Sometimes, like, you could like the edge of a brownie or a piece of cake, and that's okay too, but I like the middle.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're making brownie a la mode, mm-hmm. you want the edge, the crust, because then you put ice cream and it soaks that up.
Right.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, who wants brownies later?
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite, let's do weeknight first. Like growing up, if you think about, okay, coming home from school, right after school,
mm-hmm.
do you have a favorite snack or anything that would either be waiting for you mm-hmm. or that you had to tide you over to dinner?
One of the weirdest things I made, well, actually, I liked them all. Like if there's cookies, but sometimes I would make like burrito shells with, I would melt some butter and then add cinnamon and sugar mm-hmm. to it and then roll it. But you got to fold the end so the butter doesn't drip out.
Mm-hmm.
One time when I was a kid, I had vanilla ice cream and grape jelly mixed in.
I've added strawberry.
And it was so good.
Yeah. I've never had a grape.
There was another time when I was still living in Denver, I woke up, wrong side of the bed, probably on the opposite end of the bed, and I cried, I drug my feet, and my mom was like, if you go to school, I'll make you some cookies and you come home. So I think my mom, and this might be one of those, it was so long ago, I could be misremembering that part. That doesn't happen very often, but she made maple bars. They're like maple cookie bars.
What?
And yeah, Sadie's poking her eyeballs out. But it was, that's one of those, I don't remember how good they were. They're pretty good. My mom was good at everything. But it was the memory tied mm-hmm. to walking in as my mom was finishing the last bit of batter or dough for the cookies, and mm-hmm. I would just eat it, and I'm like, okay, my day wasn't that bad.
I think I have a lot of, like, favorite snacks after school, but I have two specific memories. One of them is, every time you say snack and after school, this is where my mind always goes, and it's when we lived in Phoenix, and I would come home and sit at our round table that was between our living room and our kitchen. It was a real small round table. And my mom would get out chips and salsa And I would sit and do my homework and look out at the pool and the sunshine. And I don't know why that one sticks so much, but that's literally one of my favorite snack memories. And then my other favorite snack memory has to do with, maybe we should have done a separate summertime one, but this has to do with my Grandma Nita. A lot of my food memories come from both of my grandmas, but my Grandma Nita's was always cheese. That's where I got my love of cheese from. She would buy every cheese under the sun, whether it was stinky or nasty or whatever. And as long as my grandma was eating it with me, I thought it was the best thing in the whole world.
Now, you have another memory tied, though.
What, with the champagne?
And cocoa fudge,
Just wait. I'm not there yet.
So I got to head the train.
So the cheese, she would always pull out this little glass. And now my dad and my stepmom don't remember this, so either my grandma didn't tell them or she was fooling me and she never really put alcohol in the glass, but she would fill up our glasses with this bubbly, I saw her pour it right out of the champagne bottle.
Kind of sparkling juice for
you. And I'm talking like 8 or 9 years old. I don't think my grandma had sparkling juice. She literally had bottle after bottle of champagne in there. But anyway, we'd have champagne and cheese, and that was one of my favorite things. Once my mom and dad got divorced, I would go over on Friday nights, and my favorite memory became watching Planet of the Apes, and she would always make popcorn and homemade cocoa fudge. It was the best cocoa fudge ever.
So, yeah, we haven't had that for a while.
Mm-mm. No, I'm fudge PTSD'd after this Christmas's recipe.
Yeah, that was a little rough. That, we had a cooking incident that a certain family relation of mine may or may not have given my wife the correct liquid ingredient. And we had something that looked a lot like fudge, but didn't end up being fudge. It was like something from the moon.
There was a mix-up in sweetened condensed milk and...
You used evaporated.
And evaporated. No, it should have been evaporated instead of sweetened condensed, I think. And it just said condensed. So it's okay. We're going to try again when we go down there.
Sorry, Mom.
So...
You owe some fudge, though.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was my favorite. That is the ultimate favorite memory of my grandma's was the cocoa fudge. And we'd sit and watch Planet of the Apes, but...
My mom actually made that too a little bit. Not very often. It's... Like, I have only tried it, like, once, and I couldn't do it. It's just...
It's hard.
You got to have the knack for it. There's a certain part when the sugar is at the right temp and it balls up. That's when you know it's done, right?
Yeah.
Or just a minute or so past that.
Yeah. And then back to your point about the Vest Pop, that was a summertime memory. My grandma would... Strawberry or grape or orange, either one. Mine was strawberry. Oh, I never had the root beer. Yeah, mine was mainly strawberry was my favorite, and then Gino's pizza. She'd keep a ton of them in the freezer, and we would pull those out and eat them in the summertime. But let's see. Speaking of summertime, also when we'd come back here in the summertime, and we'd be with my dad and Nina at the cabin, we would sometimes Nina wouldn't always go with us right away. My dad was always off on Fridays or he took off on Fridays. So we would head out to the cabin early and Nina would join us sometime on Saturday when she was off work or later Friday night, whatever. But especially the times that she didn't go with us, my dad would always pack Oreos, Wheatsworth crackers, and Cheese Whiz. And those were literally like, that is my favorite memory of him. Besides... Saturday mornings, and I have this memory. I just told you about it a couple weeks ago. I have no idea why he did this, but my dad would always sneak off before everybody else, and he would run to the store and he would buy donut sticks and vitamin D chocolate milk. So I'd come out in the kitchen and I'd wake up. Yep, literally mic drop.
Good one.
I would come out into the kitchen and he'd be sneaking back in the back door on their house on Windy Heights. And he'd have chocolate milk and donut sticks, and we'd share them. And this one particular morning, I think we were either headed off to a car show or a flea market, which is also some of my favorite memories. I know. I loved it. My grandpa used to go with us, too. It was a blast. Anyway, I don't know why, but I ended up on the ground in a tickle fest. And it was one of my favorite memories with him because it was so out of character. Just like, we must have looked at each other with one of those looks on our face and it was on. It was like we just both dove towards each other one time and he started tickling me. And then we sat down and had chocolate milk and donut sticks and went off to a car show. So one of my favorite memories. But
One of my memories from my grandpa is he and I used to fish a lot. Like, I'm the oldest out of everybody on my side. And before my grandpa died, my grandma made a paper grocery sack full of popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about how big paper sacks are, they're huge. So if you can imagine one of those filled with popcorn. So my grandpa, my brother, and I went fishing, and we had a big old sack full of popcorn, which my grandpa may have used that for bait even. I don't know. But we had a good time, but we got sunburned so bad. And my grandpa felt so bad, but consequently, I think it may have been just a couple short weeks later that my grandpa actually passed. So that was one of those. Granted, popcorn's not really, you know, food that you would think you would associate memories to. But,
mine is huge with popcorn.
In this case, it was just a big brown sack of popcorn and fishing.
Nope.
So, you know, not that I would make a bag of popcorn like that big now, but.
No, but we used to for the kids. I mean, my parents would make brown bags of popcorn and take them to the drive-in theaters with us on the weekends, take our own popcorn. That was a blast. Yeah. Add butter and salt.
And now we just take popcorn home from the theater.
Yeah. Well, and then my grandma Nita, she was always making popcorn and fudge. And then my mom, we would have, like on the weekends, we would have weekend memories. That was my favorite thing. I don't know why we never made pizza during the week, but it became like a... That was our thing, was to make either tacos, lasagna, pizza, stuff like that. That was our weekend meals. And then when we would sit down on Friday nights and watch movies and stuff, we always had popcorn. So I just realized that I didn't realize that was tied to a memory. But because of my acid reflux and some other stuff that I have going on, I can't have a whole lot of stuff in the evenings to snack on, but that is my almost every single night snack.
That's what we have.
But if you notice, I'm totally into it while I'm eating it, too. I think I just now realize that that's probably memory-related instead. So,
yeah. So let's talk about weekend family foods and memories, since you touched on that. I see written on the bottom there, crab rangoons.
Yep.
That started out as a me thing, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. I had never had them before you.
Found them in Missouri before I moved up in 99. And then I told Sadie, I was like, oh, you should let me make these.
Oh, so, one of our first dates was at the Chinese place.
In Missouri?
Yes, yep. And that was the first time Garden. Had crab rangoons there, too.
No, Dragon House, sorry. And they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was.
So I started making them for the kids growing up, and it became an annual... like holiday thing, didn't it? Over New Year's, or more so just weekends in general.
I was going to say, it was a holiday thing, but after a while it became like an every weekend thing there for a while, which Jen just brought up recently. Like, she didn't realize, you don't realize what your kids perceive your life to be like growing up. So, we, like you said earlier, we had a mixed family. For a while, my ex had three of the older ones for circumstances we don't need to go over again. But, and then our older two were with us all the time. We drove back and forth to pick up the kids. And then in the summer times, we had them the whole summer. Well, after we were all together again, obviously when you're raising five kids and only one of you was working at the time, there was a lot of weekends that we had no money, and I still don't even know how we fed seven of us on the budget that we had. But
Gino's Pizza and Vespa.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one weekend we had, like, something came up, probably a car repair or something like that, and we had, like, zero money to get groceries with. And we went to the store, and we got all Always Save products, and we spent, like, $50 for seven of us for three meals for 7 days, and we did it.
What it took.
Yeah, you could never do that.
Probably
nowadays,
there's some hamburger helper or tuna helper in
probably.
There.
Probably.
Three boxes for a dollar or
something like that. You know. Anyway, so my point to that is that Jen just brought this up with me earlier that she didn't realize, like, now she's a mom, she's a single mom, she's got two little boys with she's got a lot of health problems too, but she also doesn't have very much money to do those extra things, but she never felt like those weekends that everybody else was out doing things and all these families were traveling and going to all these places and fairs and doing all the fun concerts and whatever, all these things that we didn't get to do. She didn't even know that it was because we didn't have money. She,
I remember that.
Yeah. Her memory is that mom and dad spent an entire weekend with us. We would hole up in the house. We would get, you know, you'd make homemade pizza. We'd make crab rangoons, stuff like that, mac and cheese and hot dogs. I mean, just whatever.
It became that part the weekend didn't norm.
Really matter, but we would play games with them all weekend long. Like, as soon as you got off work and we made the homemade pizza, we were playing Call of Duty, all of us together, or Mario Party, or...
Or even younger than that, we'd go to Blockbuster.
Yeah. And, that's the other thing she mentioned was Blockbuster and rent movies, but, you know, we didn't have any money to take them to do all these fancy things, but that's their favorite memories, because they had our time and our attention, and it's now become those crab rangoons, that homemade pizza, those kind of things are attached to their best memories with us.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I have another weekend, Saturday night memory, and this is on our house on Wynwood Circle, but I love stew. I absolutely love stew, and I love cabbage, but there was a way that my mom made the cabbage, or the stew with the cabbage in it for some reason. I don't remember liking it when I was little, and it was that slimy cabbage pieces that were in that stew, and I was like, I love the stew, but I would sit there and just gag down the pieces of cabbage. But what I remember is we would always, this would be Saturday nights, she would make that, probably cook it in the crock pot or the slow cooker if I had to guess, and we would sit in front of the TV with one of those hair dryer things that you put over your head, the bonnet thing that you turn on and you plug it in and it makes all kinds of noise. You put that on my head and dry my hair because we had church the next day, and we would sit and watch Carol Burnett show. And that's like one of my very favorite memories. I didn't care that the cabbage, I mean, I did care at the time that it was blah.
Well, now the funny part is we eat corned beef and cabbage. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Sort of.
But I love it. I love cabbage now, but it's the memory that was associated with that too. So, yeah.
I see Kool-Aid pitcher with Tang.
Yeah. Does anybody else remember the old, I remember the commercials with the Kool-Aid pitcher guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of my favorite things. My mom would make Tang and put it in the Kool-Aid pitcher and then put it inside the refrigerator. See, and it was just, especially when you were sick, pulling out that Tang afterwards, finally getting to drink Tang after you'd had the stomach flu or something. Yeah.
Mine was, we had a Godfather's pitcher, Pepsi pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
We had two of them, but not at the same time because my brother broke the first one on his leg. So they had to run. My mom ran back and bought another one. So that's why my brother has a big scar across his shin bone,
because
he dropped it from the counter onto his leg and ripped him open.
You want to tell your brother's pee story? Was it a pea? A bean?
Oh, yeah. My brother did not like green beans. And so he would like pretend he was coughing in his napkin or wipe his mouth, and he would spit out a mouthful of green beans and kind of somehow lift his plate up just enough to put them underneath his plate. Well, one time my mom was clearing the table and picked his plate up and had this, there was a circle of green beans underneath his plate. And that's when my mom knew. She had to think about, wow, is he doing that? Well, then she remembered wiping his mouth. And so that's kind of one of those, like, it had nothing to do with good food. It was just,
yep.
In my brother's case, bad food.
Our kids never had to worry about it because we've always had big dogs, so hands just go under the table and the dogs take what they didn't want. So, I actually meant the microwave thing story, not that one,
okay,
but that's
so,
just as good.
Yeah. So we had a, we first moved to Missouri. We had a little tiny white house on the corner, and my brother was sticking a burrito in the microwave. He was little. I think he was only like 4 or 5, maybe. But no, he had to have been 5 because it was in like 85. He stuck a burrito in the microwave and he opened it and a bean shot out and hit him in his forehead. And I just see him. Like I was sitting perfectly where I could see him, and he screamed, "I got shot with a bean!" He had this little white scar in the middle of his forehead for the longest time where he got shot by a bean. And you could hear it. It was, he must have put it on longer than he needed to, and it just superheated the beans and the cheese inside, and pop.
Do you have any food memories attached to like being sick?
Milk.
Afterwards.
Milk and toast.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that when if I had the stomach flu, when I could get to the point where I started craving milk, I knew I was almost there. And then I would ask my mom, I said, Mom, I think I'm okay. Can I have a little glass of milk? And actually 7-Up also. Like, you wanted that cold. That 7-Up tasted so good. That chicken noodle soup. Mm-hmm. And you got to that point when you could stomach that stuff and keep it down. You're on the mend. You were almost there. Especially for me, it was milk.
Oh, yeah. And mine was never milk.
To this day, I love milk, but I don't drink it near as much as I used to. And maybe we should continue to drink it. But
especially vitamin D-wise.
Yeah.
I think my favorite memory with being sick is, I mean, how many times in our life have we been sick? My grandma Neva, Wynwood Circle, and it was, I don't know why specifically that time, but I can specifically remember laying on the couch, and I think I had some kind of stomach bug because I know I was home for a few days that time, but finally getting to that point where, yeah, she would bring me those Zesta crackers and 7-Up, but my favorite memory associated that with that was watching game shows with her during the day because you got to stay home, and she was always home, so it was her and I watching game shows, and then Young and the Restless would come on afterwards, but
Young and the Restless.
Even when I had meningitis and I was recovering and trying to learn my words again all over, that's what I was so overwhelmed by everything else in my brain that I couldn't comprehend sentences and put, to watch shows and try to keep up with stuff like that. I would turn on the game show and I probably watched the game show like 24 hours a day for months. I had no choice but to just kind of, just one of those memories.
You needed to just be for a while.
Yep.
What else do we have on our list?
I don't know. I think that's about it. One of my weeknight favorite ones was like oven fried chicken and mashed potatoes or meatloaf. And
yeah, that's true. I knew if my mom was making oven fried chicken and mashed potatoes that there probably was going to be biscuits.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that too.
Yep.
It's all about the biscuits.
Nina's were her, she taught me how to make them. When in the summer times they would come home and they would make they'd have us start the grill ahead of time. She'd have the meat all ready to go, but I would make homemade potatoes and onions. That was my favorite thing there. And then her Jell-O, I can't even remember what's in it, but there was like fruit salad and cherry Jell-O. I think that was one of my brother's favorites, but again, memories associated with that. Now it's like her Able skewers and stuff like that, too.
Food's a relevant memory maker.
Yep.
Let me take one last gander.
Okay. Yeah, so like I said, when you're younger, you don't appreciate those kind of things. I think we did. We are old souls anyway. So if I had the chance to go out with my friends or spend it with my grandparents or my parents, I hung around my parents and my grandparents. That was my first choice anyway. So I learned a lot growing up from your parents and mine, and grandparents have some pretty cool memories attached with food and just in general.
And now we're at a point in our lives where
we are the grandparents.
Our kids are making their own memories and their own families, and we get to watch it all happen.
Yep.
Sort of.
We're also trying to figure out how to still keep, not act like grandparents and keep our love alive too at the same time, and not just become like stagnant parents and grandparents and stagnant couple, I guess, more than anything.
That's true. That's more important.
Like your parents are gone. No, I didn't mean to say that. Not your parents. Your kids are gone and grown. Your grandparents. Yeah,
my parents are gone, except for my mom.
Yeah. Yep. So.
Well, this has been our third in a row podcast from the Crafted Quill podcast.
Yeah. Sitting at our kitchen table, looking out the window, sunshine.
This has definitely been a foodie special.
Yeah.
Thanks for the biscuits and gravy.
Yep, that's right.
We hope you join us again the next time we do a podcast, which if we keep up, we'll just keep cranking them on Sundays. I guess that might be the only way we get these done is on Sunday.
Yeah.
After we had coffee.
Yep. And we might be, we'll delve out into some other subjects and stuff like that too. We might even take you with us. It's supposed to be 60 degrees today, so we're going to go out here in a little bit and return our Redbox movies and get some sunshine for a while.
Go to our favorite coffee shop and sit in a corner somewhere.
Definitely. We'll take you with us on the road.
Have coffee, we'll travel.
That's right.
Well, thanks for joining, Sadie.
Yeah.
And we're doing something different. We're actually using our Podbean app from our phones now. It's a new feature used by Podbean. So if anybody out there is curious as to how they can make a podcast, well, guess what? Podbean made it easy for you. You literally do the whole thing from your phone. They give you intro music, outro music. You title it. There you go.
I think I'm going to come up with like a free little workshop thing too to show everybody, because I've had a lot of people ask us, you know, how did you become authors? How did you write your stories? How did you start podcasting? Why did you start doing that? Maybe we'll talk about that one day on the podcast. But it's easy. Yeah, and we started with Audacity and some other products. We'll go into that later. But
it's easier now than ever.
Now it's, yeah. And I actually learned this from a doctor that worked with me. And she's like, aren't you using your phone? You just hit this little plus button and it's good to go. Lifesaver. We could have been doing this all along.
And they even make it, our iPhones, what we use, is actually, the mic on it's good enough. But there is iPhone microphone accessories.
Which I think she uses too.
You can get and plug into the bottom of your phone. It's,
yeah.
We just haven't gone that way yet. We will.
I don't care about being perfect. I just want to be real, so.
Be real. Hashtag be real.
Keep it real, people.
Hashtag foodie.
That's right. Hashtag have food will travel. Hashtag have coffee will travel. Hashtag in pursuit of purpose. Hashtag, never mind. We've gone over the top now. Coffee's kicked in.
Well, this has been another episode of the Crafted Quill Podcast.
And the Daily Escape Podcast.
I'm Steven.
I'm Sadie. See you on the flip side.
Peace out.